Picking a fight was an odd way to say goodbye. In January 1953, Prime Minister Winston Churchill crossed the Atlantic to bid farewell to President Harry Truman, who was just 2 weeks away from retirement. At a dinner in Truman's honor at the British Embassy, the guests included Secretary of State Dean Acheson, Secretary of Defense George Marshall, and a handful of other top American officials. No sooner had dinner begun than Churchill launched into a passionate diatribe in favor of Zionism. According to his right-hand man, Jock Colville, Churchill's position aroused the disagreement of practically all the Americans present, though they admitted that the large Jewish vote would prevent them disagreeing publicly. The choice of subjects was impolite. It forced Truman to relive a bitter dispute that had placed him at loggerheads with some of the men around the table, George Marshall in particular. Back in May 1948, Marshall, then Secretary of State, nearly resigned in protest over Truman's intention to recognize Israel. In an especially heated exchange in the White House, Marshall accused the president of pandering to the Jewish vote and of endangering U.S. national security as a result. If the United States did recognize Israel, Marshall said, then he would cast his vote against Truman in the upcoming election. The president, of course, did not follow his Secretary of State's advice, and Marshall somehow made his peace with it, but raw feelings persisted. After dinner, the argument continued, but Truman drifted away from the group, sat down at the piano, and began playing. When Churchill noticed, he instructed Colville to corral everyone around the piano. Truman performed for the group for about a quarter of an hour, and then made an exit, followed swiftly by Marshall. All the others remained behind, and the debate kicked up again, continuing uninterrupted until 1 in the morning. In sidelining his guest of honor, Churchill had not acted alone. An invisible accomplice helped him usher Truman out the door. Dwight D. Eisenhower, the president-elect, was spending the evening in New York, planning his new administration, but even from afar he managed to dominate the party. He had already tapped 3 of Churchill's dinner guests for jobs in his administration. One of them, Walter Bedell Smith, the director of the CIA, had served as Ike's chief of staff during the war. Churchill, who had been on familiar terms with Beadle for years, could confidently assume that he would enjoy easy access to the new president. Truman would have had 2 more weeks in the White House, but his power was already gone. Saying farewell was a good excuse for Churchill to come, but his true purpose was to begin influencing the new team, not to honor the old. Picking a fight was his way of doing it. Fatuous Churchill. Once Truman had gone off to bed, the argument focused on 2 main issues, the European Defense Community, EDC, and the Middle East. On the surface, the issues seemed utterly disconnected, but for Churchill they were 2 parts of the same challenge: persuading the Americans to accept his vision of the special relationship between Britain and the United States. In both Europe and the Middle East, he argued, the United States should put the alliance with Britain ahead of all other interests. His American guests, however, were not having any of it. Originally proposed by the French, the EDC was a plan for an integrated pan-European army, an idea that Churchill hated. In its place, he proposed a grand coalition, like the one that had defeated Germany and Japan in World War II. The Cold War alliance should be a pyramid, with the Anglo-American partnership at its apex. Emphasizing the Anglophone bond, he dismissed the multilingual EDC as nothing but a sludgy amalgam.